This is an adult podcast made by adults for adults. Our favorite distracted guest is back, and that's always awesome because this podcast never should stay on topic. Join us on this crazy ride of fake phone fans.
Welcome to Fake Film Fams, a movie podcast for thoughtful degenerates. I'm Suede Best, and I'm a sexy nun.
Hey everyone, I'm Walter. I actually don't have anything. That's my intro. Sorry, guys.
I'm Celine, and I'm the fake film friend.
Yeah. That's true. You are a fake friend. We're not actually
you
friends.
No, say it. Go say it. No, Walter, I want to hear it. What do you have to say to me?
Okay, you don't prefer my little degen, right?
I don't.
Like our little degens?
I don't identify as a degen, okay?
It's horrible, right? It's horrible. It's repellent.
It's a little kinky for me. That's what
yes,
I'll say.
I agree.
But to the fake film friend, I want to say that I heard, you know, there was a time when you guys called me the best guest, and then I was listening to a podcast episode of your podcast recently, and you called Catherine the best guest?
I mean, she's the OG. She's the original member. She was here before I was.
What are you even saying?
We love you, Catherine.
Oh, my God. Catherine.
We love you, Catherine. Come
sleep back. With your eyes open, bitch. I'm coming for you.
Also, didn't you claim yourself as a fake film friend before we even talked about Catherine being a co-host?
Did I do that?
Well, that would make sense. You know, all of the marijuana is messing with my memory. TBQHAFAF.
That's pretty funny because the last time you were here, you were already talking about marijuana, right? You were incredibly
That's
fucking high.
True.
You know, Celine, if you say something once, it's like, oh, you know, it happens. But if it happens again and again, it starts to be a habit. Is there something we need to talk about?
I
is
would
there
like to a, talk about like a- something. Suede is addicted to nicotine.
I mean, yeah, obviously.
That's so deeply shameful to me.
That's also not true because of my incredible editing skills. So I have managed to cut out all of Suede's coughs like a true pro.
All of my hideous.
Yeah, it's actually
coughs.
Not obvious to any of our little degens right now.
They're my God.
Do I get my juice?
Yeah, let me pop open the can. I'm pouring the juice into the cup. Here's the cup of juice for you. Here's your juice cup.
Thank
your
you.
Juice cup of
what's the most pretentious movie I watched since last time we talked? I haven't been watching movies. I've been so fucking busy. But it probably is Pandora's Box by George Willem Past, made in 1929.
Jesus.
What do you?
It's just old.
Yeah, the reason why I've been watching old movies, though, is because I can put on an old movie and then edit at the same time.
You can multitask like that?
Not really. It's a very specific time that I can do it when I'm proof listening. So I put on the podcast or proof listening, and then I'm watching a silent film. And that's the only time I kind of get to watch movies these days because of the fucking war.
What is proof listening?
I like to give the podcast a listen once before I put it out. Is that not normal?
That's normal. I just didn't know what that word was. I don't know anything about this.
You know, Walter actually does a lot of work for this podcast. I give him
that.
A lot of shit. I'm just letting the fans know.
You're a fake fan because I'm more of a fan of Walter than you are.
That's not true. He's my lover. He's my wife. He's my boy wife.
I don't know if you
my
noticed.
Boy wife. You think?
What?
You think that's?
Yeah. No, that sounds bad.
That's my boy wife.
My boy wife.
What about wife boy?
I think the issue is boy.
The issue is boy.
But you know, speaking of this movie, in the movie there was a line: "I'm not Satan's boy."
No. We're not.
I can't talk about it.
No, we're in Walter's pretentious
I
zone. We have
this
to
was
let
a
Walter
movie
have
podcast.
His juice.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Walter.
Yeah, but we're talking about Pandora. We have to let him have his juice. Come on, keep sipping.
Give me my
cup,
juice,
my boy wife.
Babies. Or give me my juice, boys.
Oh my God.
All right. So this film, 1929, Pandora's Box, is about a woman whose beauty basically ruins everyone's lives around her.
Relatable.
Which sounds really sexist. But at the same time, it's more like all the men around her, all the women don't understand her and just only care about her beauty. The film's famous for a lesbian subplot, which is pretty early on for a 1929 movie, right? There's a countess who gets manipulated by the main character's beauty into doing shitty things because she loves her too much.
Yeah, I thought lesbians were invented in like the 60s. I didn't know there were lesbians before like 1963.
The first man was a lesbian.
The first man was a lesbian. That's right, Adam. Adam was a lesbian. It's short for Adam.
So how did you know this but didn't think it was invented in 1960s? Is it because you don't know dates?
Who believes in the Bible? Who believes in the Bible? That's all a bunch of hogwash.
Okay, so who's the first man to you?
The first man? That's easy. John Wayne.
Whoa.
John Wayne was the first real man.
John Wayne was after 1960s.
I know, he's the first real man. That's why there were only lesbians in the 1960s, because before it, there were no real men.
So that means still the first man was a lesbian.
John Wayne was a lesbian.
Because he loved women, he loved cigarettes, and he was horribly racist, which is the three defining characteristics of manhood.
Oh, I thought you were going to say of lesbian.
Yeah, me too.
That would have been funny. I fucked up the joke.
Well, you might have fucked up the joke, but who doesn't fuck up in this film is Louise Brooks, who is the main actress of this movie. Black Bob.
Dude, that was such a good transition. That was so fucking good. Dude, you are such a Chad. Fuck yes. All right,
now my transition has been ruined. Fucking congrats. Great bob cut.
Oh, you love a bob cut.
No, she is really, really pretty. She just has a very weird cult status. And I think even like when I was 16, I knew she was a cult figure. This is a question I want to ask you guys. How long can a cult status last for a cult person before it's no longer cult?
Before it's just famous?
No, because the cult status has to do with the amount of fans, yeah. Not the length. Or the kind of fans, right?
Like, I think Twin Peaks is no longer a cult classic.
Yes.
It's gone mainstream.
That's very, I would agree. Similar to, like, Mother.
Earthbound and Mother are no longer cult games, you think?
I don't think so. They've gotten so much play. Everyone knows about them.
But they still don't have localization.
Earthbound? Yeah, you can get it on the Nintendo Switch.
Not Mother 3.
Oh, not Mother 3. Okay, well, I'm specifically talking about Earthbound, which was a cult classic for a really long time.
Do you think this podcast has cult status?
Absolutely.
I think it's a cult classic, but it's going to become... It's going to become mainstream. Our podcast is going to become the next Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's the FFCU. Wait, no, it's the FFFCU, the Fake Film Fan Cinematic Universe. I'll be Boyman. That's my superhero name, Boyman. Boys! Boys! Celine, let's talk about your love of boys. You love boys, right?
I can't do this. You know what? I would say this is... No, I can't do this. I'm sorry. I'm quitting. I can't be in this universe. This is a scary place. This is a dark place.
You can be boy woman or girl boy. You be my sidekick, girl boy.
A man a dollar yesterday, and he said, "Thank you, sir. I mean, thank you, ma'am." And then I looked in the mirror in the car for like 2 hours, just adjusting my hair to try and look more like a woman. It was hard.
I get called a woman all the time, too, though.
Thanks, Walter.
Yeah, me too, actually. Makes me feel
better. I mean, we have really big man boobs. I think that's actually a bigger reason than my hair. Because my hair's not even that long half the time when I get called a woman.
Walter, I think in Swade's case, you're mistaking man boobs for pectorals.
Oh.
That's true. Apologies. Number A. Number B, when I get mistaken as a woman, it's almost exclusively on the telephone. Because of my high effeminate voice.
Okay, that is completely not what we're talking about, then.
Yes, we are! We're talking about getting good circles of... Yeah!
We're talking about visuals.
Sound is visual, because the waves go against your eyeballs, all right, Walter.
You're right. Interference is a bitch.
Do you think Celine has a bob cut? What would you describe her haircut as similar to this woman that you like?
Celine is black, this person's white. So their
Thank
hair
you.
Is not curly.
I'm glad we got that out there. I'm glad we let people know. You're in here first, folks.
White people don't have curly hair. And I'm black.
Jewish people have curly hair, but I don't think she's Jewish either because she's from the Midwest. Apparently,
I'm definitely
where, like,
not Jewish.
No, I think he's talking about the actress.
Nah, I was joking.
Oh no, I ruined the joke again! What an idiot!
You're off your game, Suede.
I'm off my game. It's because I'm thinking about boys.
Okay. What? You know who else thought a lot about boys? Louise Brooks.
Did she really?
I think one of the reasons why her cult status is so strong is because she fucked a lot of people. When she was married, she would fuck other people. But this is a little slut-shamey, so that's not really why. But people are like, wow, sex-free liberal stuff that people love. And she also was like, fuck you, Hollywood, and then went to Europe for a bit.
Okay. She was a rebel.
Yeah, if anyone's interested and you don't know her, you should go look up her history. It's actually really interesting. However, the one thing that makes this film really memorable to a lot of people, that probably the most famous scene is that her first husband dies and she goes to court in like a black sad dress with a gown on top.
A sad
to
dress.
Mourn.
Do you mean like a veil?
Yeah, I mean a veil. Okay. If the veil was used in like the metals, I would call it a happy dress, not a sad dress.
In the metals?
What are
what
you talking
is
about?
The, in the metals.
Like with grass and insects and ants?
Oh, a meadow.
What?
A meadow.
Yeah, yeah. If you wore a veil in the meadows, that would be a happy dress, not a sad dress.
If it was a black veil, it wouldn't be happy.
Even in the meadows?
Yeah, even in the meadows.
I'm still reeling from the fact that when you say meadows, it sounds like metals.
Oh, I'm sorry that my T's and D's are very fucking different.
Oh, that is what it is, actually. No, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't people say water?
Yeah. Water.
Watch her. Watch her.
Warsh.
Wash the boys. That's I don't know why that's in my head today.
Doys. Wash the doys.
Wash the doys.
Backstreet doys.
Backstreet doys. The doors are back in town. Okay, so she goes to the funeral wearing
her black veil.
Or no, I'm sorry. She goes to the court wearing her black veil.
Yeah, because they think she killed the husband, and then they find her guilty, and she runs away. And then she has this wanted poster with her black veil on top of her. And instead of it becoming a sad dress, it's now a super sexy, suspenseful villain dress. It's really sick. And honestly, this is the coolest wanted poster I've ever seen. Except maybe Sanji's hand-drawn wanted poster in One Piece. That might be actually cool.
You guys, can I say something? I appreciate you talking about all the sexy women in Pandora's box, Walter. When are we going to get to the movie?
We have to let Walter have his juice. This is an important segment.
I'm sorry. This is the last time. I'm sorry. Do this segment. Whatever.
Never coming back on the podcast. Literally fired from the podcast.
I don't want to come back. You won't see me again. I'm done.
This boy's done. This boy's out of here.
I'm Satan's boy now.
Just talk about fucking the
Walter,
devil.
I'm sorry. No, Walter. Right. No, Walter.
Let's go.
I'm very sorry, Walter. I don't know. You know, I don't know what I was going for. And I'm sorry. And I love you. And I want to keep hearing you talk about your
boys. We've been talking about boys for so long. So what exactly boys do you want to talk about for this film?
Yeah, there are a lot of boys to talk about. We watched the devils.
No. You cut Celine off about boys and the devils. So allow Celine
to
talk about
what the fucking movie is.
No, we could tell them after this.
Right now, this podcast is a boy's world. I'm a girl in a boy's world with this.
She's breaking the glass ceiling.
I'm breaking the gas ceiling.
You're breaking the gas ceiling. Seal it up with gas and break it out.
I'm sorry. Walter, do you want to finish talking about Pandora's box?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about in the devils, too. So
no, but I want to hear about these boys and the devils. Celine, what exactly about these boys do you care about in the devil?
Celine, boy crazy Anderson.
This is what I care about.
I don't remember a single boy.
In the devils, there's one line where he yells, "I am not Satan's boy."
He does say that.
And I just thought that was really funny. That's literally all I wanted to say. I'm sorry.
I'm not Saban's boy. Oh, no, never mind. I don't get my T's fucked up. What other letters are similar to B's, D's, and T's? Do you think C's are pretty similar?
C's and S's are close to T's.
Yeah, and
L's. L's are pretty similar to B's.
No,
yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, they are.
L's, B's, and H's are soft.
But you make
always
totally
say Binkin.
Binkin as opposed to what?
Lincoln.
Abraham Binkin.
Abraham Binkin.
Did you know he had sex with men?
Why? Do you know
he was
this?
Abraham Lincoln.
Oh!
I found it out.
Abraham Lincoln.
No, he really did have sex with men.
That doesn't make you gay.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I
fuck dudes all the time.
Then.
I'm not gay. I just fuck dudes right. Sometimes. Celine, do you remember? Were you the one who sent me that clip? It's SVU, I think, where that guy's like, "I'm not gay. I just fuck men." And Ice Cube is like, "No, dude, if you fuck guys, you are gay."
I don't think that was me, but that's amazing.
That's also a huge meme, though. You forgot the last part of that meme. The guy's face after Ice Cube says it, like a big revelation comes down onto him.
We'll post it.
Yeah, we're really bad at posting memes on Twitter. Actually, we're really bad at posting anything. Every single time Swade says, "We'll post it." Has it been posted?
Usually not. I get distracted. I'm busy. I'm thinking about boys.
Yeah. So how many boys are in the devils?
I would say it's a boy-girl party.
It is. It is definitely a boy-girl party.
50-50 ratio.
My favorite boy is probably the sexy priest, Father Barr.
The Grandiel.
Grandiel is great. But
Garfunkel?
Yeah, with the Garfunkel.
Ding, the sweet summary time. Jingle, jingle, bing, bing. Summary, summary.
You know, Celine, do you want to quick summarize it?
Who, me?
Yeah, I believe in you.
So this opens with some sort of French monarchy gay performance, and then the Pope is like, we gotta marry church and state as one and kill all the Protestants. And the king's like, yes. And also the movie starts with like, this is based on a true story. You guys jump in because okay. I'm not very confident.
Okay. So
there's a woman whose beauty is so attractive that all the men have their lives ruined. And then her first husband dies.
Okay, so she has to go to court. You're thinking about Pandora's Box. You're thinking about Pandora's Box. You're getting the movies confused.
Oh, fuck! No, wait, are they both silent?
They're both silent. No.
One's loud.
And black and white? And German?
And German? No, this is a French movie. Came out in 1971.
It's not French.
And basically...
It's English.
I don't know why I thought it was French.
About the French.
It's about the French. That's why I thought
that. You know why you should know it's from Britain? The production designer is Derek Jarman.
Oh, really?
Who's that?
My favorite art house director.
The one that Suede knows how to reference. It's our first experimental film we talked about. A lot of Derek Jarman's movies, the production designs are like absolutely crazy. And this is the ear moment. This is his first time he ever was a production designer. And this movie gave him so much influence moment, into all his movies.
So basically there's this priest, Father Grandier. He is a philanderer. He has sex with lots of different people, which he shouldn't do. As a father of the cloth. And everyone thinks he's...
So it is like Pandora's Box.
Actually, no, it is because everyone wants to fuck him, including this hunchback nun. And she's like obsessed with him and is having like lustful thoughts and then finds out that he's secretly gotten married to a girl. He's also impregnated this woman, this like duke's daughter.
This child, frankly.
Is she a child?
She's got pigtails.
Yeah, but that's just normal sexy. That's not, you know.
She's a princess.
Let me just get through the plot summary.
This is why I do the plot jingle, because the plot jingle puts me in the mood to not interrupt plot, because plot just makes me fucking fall asleep. I hate plot so much.
I know you do.
Get me out of this.
Okay, I'll do it quick. This nun finds out that he's married and like has all these lustful thoughts and is like super upset. So all these people get together who want to take Grandier down, who've been like fucked over by him in different minuscule ways. Like the Duke, whose daughter's been impregnated. These two surgeons who are mad at him for, I guess, destroying their favorite alligator that they use for medicine. And basically convince the nuns that they are all possessed by Le Grandier. They're saying he's a sorcerer who's infected them with devils. And all these women start being like, oh, yeah. He took me to midnight mass. They're Satanists. He's a Satanist, this and that. We've all been infected by the devil. And so they burn him to death. I have some movie facts. Can I do some movie facts real quick, Walt?
Please. Oh, sorry.
I don't know why I asked Walter. Let me ask
this.
It's misogyny.
It's because it's a boys' club.
It's a boys' club.
You know what makes this film more of a boys' club? The only reason why Suede wanted to watch this is to shout out to that fucking bookstore girl who came recommended
Walter,
this
come
movie.
On, you put me on blast. this was suggested to us by a lady named Laura who came through my store. It is a good suggestion.
It's Bora.
Her name's Fedora?
She's a fedora. She's a magic fedora who exists on my head.
I'm glad you found her.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, so this movie is like super controversial. And actually, there's very few streaming sites you can find it on. And it's because of this one specific section called The Rape of Christ. All these nuns in the nunnery are naked. Father Barr, who's like leading the exorcism, is trying to get them unsatanified. And all these women like pull down a Jesus statue and start gyrating it and fucking it and sucking on his dick.
The feet too.
His feet and his dick and having orgasms and stuff. And this other priest, Father Mignon, I guess, who's like this terrible dude with a bowl cut. Yeah, Father Fillet. He's got this terrible bowl cut, and the whole time he's been like out to get Le Grandier. He like sees them and he like starts masturbating. It's like super, like I was watching it, I was saying about my grandma, my dear sweet grandma, my mama Lee, who is a devout Catholic, and I was like, man, if heaven is real, I hope she's not watching me right now, because she would be very upset that I was watching this movie. She would probably cry. So yeah, this movie is like super controversial, and like a lot of critics of the time when it came out, including people like Roger Ebert, hated it.
Did Bobby Egbert hate it because of religion, or just because he thought it was bad?
He just thought it was a dirty, filthy movie. full of shock value, which, I mean, it is. It's a shocking film, but that's the kind of the point-ish.
Yeah, but it was advertised as, like, not an exploitation film. I think that's the issue. I don't know. What's the fucking director's name? Kurt Russell? I don't think he does movies that are, like, not
It's Ken
fucking...
Russell, I think.
Ken Russell, sorry. I don't think he does movies that are not, like, just shock value type of movies. I just feel people take his films so seriously and don't give his films the same space that other exploitation directors have. John Moore, Sitsugu.
Takeshi Miike.
Like, yeah, yeah. People don't talk about him like Takeshi Miike or something like that. That's a better example. Thank you.
The other interesting fact is that, so this is based off of a true story, but it's also pretty factual to what historians recount, including Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World. He also wrote a nonfiction book about this, and a lot of historians later say similar things, and then when Huxley writes his novel, he repeats what's been said, which is that it seems the burning at the stake of La Grandeur was politically minded, and that in fact part of the reason that he was burnt to death was because this nun who was obsessed with him was very angry that he wouldn't be the like leader of her abbey, and so she said he was possessed, which is what happens in the film. If I start saying this movie's historically accurate, Walter's gonna get very angry because like history's subjective and like all this philosophy stuff. From what I read, it mirrors in a lot of ways what historians say about.
Okay, but that's like saying fucking Prince of Egypt is historically accurate.
Okay, what I'm saying is that the movie mirrors what historians say happened at the event.
No, it mirrors the narrative structure, but it doesn't mirror any of the details.
How do you know? I read about this. It does. There's stuff that they talk about that shows up in the movie. The details.
So what's the rape of Christ in these historical details?
No, the rape of Christ was
the crocodile in the fucking details.
Okay, so yeah, because you obviously not that.
I'm just saying that a historical drama that is historically accurate is kind of the norm. I'd be more interested if this was a historical drama that was completely not historically correct.
I would believe the crocodile.
Yeah, I agree. I would believe the crocodile.
As a plague solution, I would absolutely believe people were having crocodiles.
Oh, they did a bunch of crazy shit during the plague. You know, they used to eat mummies once they started going to other places and colonizing them and taking their mummies.
Oh, I did know that.
They would like eat it as a cure-all.
Speaking of white people, this did make me wonder, was the Grandeur white? Because when I looked at him, it was very confusing because his skin was white and his eyes were blue, but he had the hair and the mustache of a man.
You're talking
of color.
About the actor, or are you talking about historically?
I'm talking about the actor.
He claimed that he was a descendant of Peter the Great, Tsar of Russia.
Okay, so he was definitely white.
We knew it, Eastern European.
As an ally, I just want to say that I noticed there are no people of color in this movie, so I want to just say I respect both of you as people of color, that I noticed that.
Suede, I was in this movie.
Celine was the Jesus. Celine was the Jesus statue.
You know, I want to say something. In middle school, Suede used to call me Jesus because I had the most facial hair of everyone in this school.
Who would do that? What an asshole. Who would do that? Walter, why would you do that? You said Walter did that, right?
Yeah, that's what I said.
I feel like all middle schoolers should be like just put in cages until they're like done being middle schoolers.
Not me. I was good. I bet Walter was also good. Weren't you, Walter?
I thought that if I didn't get famous by the age of 25, I would take a chainsaw out and slice as many people as I could and get shot by the police, because then at least my name would be in the history books.
There you go.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Are you saying you don't look back on your middle school and you never... I feel like you bullied someone.
Oh, I didn't do much bullying, but I was such a...
No, I'm talking to Celine.
I gossiped.
I gossip still.
Yeah, I don't bully people anymore, but Celine still gossips. So.
We all stay gossiping. No one I know loves gossip more than Suede.
Dude, that's
okay?
Such horseshit.
Suede loves
that's
gossip
such
so much.
Shit.
No, that's... You love
no,
gossip.
No, I love gossip more than Suede, because every single time I try to gossip with Suede, Suede gets annoyed. Suede also doesn't like gossiping about his friends, which I love doing. I like gossiping about you when you're not here, Celine, and then gossiping about Suede when Suede's not here.
Yeah, I don't like doing that.
And then Suede gets so mad at me when I gossip.
I can't believe Suede said he was an ally when he won't gossip with people of color. I've seen women lose control like those nuns.
When you were in middle school.
And it was very funny. No, I actually, okay, I was in California and I went to the Coptic church there with my aunt. the new father there, we call him the Abuna, which means our father in Arabic. He was very young. He basically looked like me with a beard. And all these old Egyptian women thought he was so sexy and were like lined up afterward to talk. They're like, he plays basketball with the teenagers. Like, he's everything. And that was repulsive and hilarious.
You think that's repulsive?
And not scary. It's very sad, I guess, to see your aunt you usually like translate Bed Bath and Beyond coupons for and like play Roomy Cube with to all hours of the night. Ooh, it's hard to see her desiring a young man.
But that's not disgusting in an ontological way. That's like a you being squeamish about physical intimacy way, right?
Was it that I also desired him?
Did you desire him? Were you the Hunchback Nun?
I was perhaps the Hunchback. He's a very sexy priest.
Okay, so this is...
Have you guys met any sexy priests?
I don't think I have. I've had some really cool priests come through the bookstore, but I've never met one and been like, God damn. But I imagine it could happen. I mean, it makes, you know, this gets back to the whole Edward Cullen thing, right? The man of the cloth is very easy to desire because you know he can never move towards you. It's like the perfect fantasy because you never have to actually interact with it. And it's also very taboo.
Did you guys think that this priest in the movie was sexy?
Oh, yeah.
Because he did move toward women.
La Grandeur? Yeah, La Grandeur is very sexy, right?
Walter, what did you think?
Sexy as a man or sexy as a priest?
I'd like to know, what's the difference?
Okay, dude. Me and Sweet had this conversation while I was in Roanoke. I don't know what sexy means.
Yeah. Okay. Did you find him hot?
Attractive.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Celine?
Yeah, Walter can't answer questions like this.
I'm sorry. I thought that the hottest he was in the whole movie was when they shaved him down.
Dude, that's
and
just because you
like
have
a British bulldog.
That's just because you like bald guys.
I have bald guy fetish.
They're also actors and actresses. Who in that movie was not hot?
Well, I was surprised that the nuns were supposed to be ugly, but the only thing that was ugly about them was that they were also all bald.
And one of them has a hunchback.
Yeah, but she was like a model with a hunchback.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. I was watching this movie and I was like, God damn, that's a sexy lit. I actually googled sexy hunchback just to see if that was like a micro niche of pornography. I mean, like, there is a lot that goes into why these women find him so attractive, but I think you can pull that out and be like, how weird is it when a group of people latch on to someone's physical attractiveness? They lust after a person, and that person has facets that would normally get in the way. And there are really fucked up examples of this, right? Like people being obsessed with Millie Bobby Brown. That's like a real fucked up example because she's like a little girl and people like really want to have sex with her. But like when you move to something
Isn't
else,
she
like
fat?
Walter.
Is Millie Bobby Brown fat?
Oh, I didn't know who Millie Bobby Brown was. I thought it was that redneck girl.
Are you talking about Honey Boo Boo?
Yeah, it's like Honey Boo Boo. I was like, people want to fuck Honey Boo Boo already? What the fuck? That's so gross.
Is it gross because she's a little girl or because she's fat, though, Walter?
You guys, this is so offensive. I can't have my name associated with this.
So this is what I wanted to say. This is what I wanted to say, because I actually had a point. There are two kinds of fat. There's like the fat that you see yourself, and there is like the fat that other people see you as. Is fat objective or subjective is what I've been thinking about, because there have been times in my life that I have felt like a fat person.
I think that like public perception of people is subjective. What is considered fat and what society is super subjective. Like, I feel like there are so many women in Egypt who would be considered fat in the States, but wouldn't be considered fat in Egypt, for example. But I think that an issue with calling all of this subjective is that it gets rid of abilities to provide social services and advocate for people who are marginalized because of being perceived as fat. Like, okay, Walter is laughing at me, but I think what I'm saying is legit.
No, fuck no, I'm so fucking sorry. I'm still fucking thinking Honey Boo Boo and it's cracking me up.
No, I get what you're saying, Celine. And this is what I've been thinking about, right? What is the difference between me thinking I'm fat and someone being heavy enough to where the doctors are not listening to them because of their neuropathy? Because instead of it being the brain tumor that they have, they say it's just prediabetes. Is there a difference there? Am I fat in the same way that person is fat?
And your body dysmorphia says that you are.
I mean, I'm not anymore. I'm jacked now. I'm super swole. I look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I saw this list online that basically like stratifies like all the different versions of like fatness, mid-fat, people who are labeled as clinically obese, and like how it's important to not lump these together because they come with different social barriers and oppressions and stuff. But any label, having it have the ability to be made kind of an umbrella thing is important. I think fat phobia affects everyone because bodies aren't like a fixed thing, right? Like you don't know what's going to happen in your life, you know, like same with like ageism and like disability politics. So, you know, I think solidarity with the person whose doctor won't listen to him, but not conflating the two experiences.
I'm like very anti-label. So part of this conversation makes me want to pull back. Like the idea of like stratifying different labels of fatness really ekes me out. My issues with labels was all well and good, but pragmatically, right, there's a difference between carrying a little bit of extra weight in your legs and stomach and like being heavy enough to where school children throw pennies at you or whatever. There's a big difference between being someone like me who's attracted to men and someone who, like, presents very gay, very queer. They're going to have a vastly different experience walking down the street than I do. And we don't have labels for that, right, necessarily. But recognizing those stratifications is important. But it still doesn't get to my question, which is, like, what is the difference between thinking you're fat and then being fat? Is that a thing? Like, what do we do with that statement? Because it seems
that's
unkind.
I mean, that's called body dysmorphia, right?
Well, what I'm asking is, if I am thinking I'm fat, and I am not fat, does that mean that there is a thing that is fat? That is my question.
No. I think fat is a social construct.
But so is race, and we still acknowledge those as being real day-to-day things. So what? How do you decide what is fat?
So I think the same with fat. Well, okay, so like race, fat is also relative to society you're in, right?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
You know, like in the States, me and my dad both have black person status. If I go to South Africa, me and my dad are treated as like mixed.
That's
or like
that's,
brown skin, right?
In the same way that like you can break down racial politics into a simple way, which is that there is white and there's non-white. That you can get into further minutia, but a lot of what happens in the States is white and non-white.
I think that's true in how we learn about it, but I also think every group of color in the States that isn't black has gotten their rights in a way that's been predicated on anti-blackness. You know, I'm inclined to think of it as all different things and categories that overlap a lot too. And like African people having different experiences than Black American people also having overlapping Venn diagrams. I think we're always talking about it as like white versus people of color, but I think it's very nuanced. But white people are always the true evil.
Just like fat people. That's what I understand from this conversation, right? That was what you're saying?
No, that's not true. Healthy people are the true evil actually in this diagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
No, that is fucked up. Healthy people need to all die. I truly believe that.
Well, okay, but what about fat people who are healthy?
It's because
Walter's fault.
All right, I get this doesn't work practically, but I put health as a sort of dominant power when it comes to this type of stuff. So everything to do with bodies, physical disabilities, mental health, and body types, to me, all this falls underneath in relationship to health. So I prefer to think of everyone as being not healthy, and that health is this idea that everyone revolves around, always in relationship. So instead of being like, hey, people say you're not healthy, but you are kind of healthy in your own way, I much prefer just being like, no one is fucking healthy, and we all need to realize that health is a bullshit social construct. And then after that, we can deal with the minutiae of like what is different with each part of
health
what
is unachievable,
being unhealthy means.
Is what you're saying.
Health is whiteness, and therefore health is what has power here.
I actually have a doctor friend. I was talking with them about this because I smoke. I'm a cigarette smoker, and I think I would be unhealthy in a very different way if I wasn't smoking cigarettes. I was saying, you know, health is a social construct. And she says, yeah, health is a social construct. That's why I'm not interested in health. What I'm interested in is quality of life. You as a smoker now might be feeling a whole lot better because like it helps you with your brain. It helps you with your social anxiety. It helps you deal with reality. But when you're 85 and you're breathing through a tube and you feel like you're drowning to death on your own snot, that's not going to be a quality life. That there's a difference between health and quality of life, which I actually have been trying to focus more.
Okay, but your conversation with your doctor is completely different from what we're talking about. Whenever you call something a social construct, it's never about realizing it's a social construct. It's about realizing the power it has on you. I believe this doctor, and I believe quality of life is like the better thing. Of course, that's what you should strive for. But even if you do that in your head mentally, you're not going to be able to escape the fucking pressures of your culture context.
Whenever I disagree, I think that's you being a pessimist. Plenty of people have escaped their cultural context. It doesn't mean they don't have baggage and scars from their cultural context, but people are capable of moving past
that. In my opinion, that's just like blindness.
That's so pessimistic, though. I don't agree with that at all. Are you telling me you don't think people can move past their cultural traumas?
No, I think the culture, no, it's not cultural traumas. That's not the right way to put it. It's that a social construct isn't a made up thing in that type of way. It's so ingrained in everything you fucking do that you can't escape it. Otherwise, it's not a social construct. It's just a fucking, like, I don't know. It's just a thing.
I think this is why performance and Judith Butler also matter, right? Like, we're trained to perform and practice the context of whatever social constructs and identities and constraints we're living with.
Right. So the act of performance is like deprogramming almost. That's how I understood Judith Butler.
It's not a deprogramming, because deprogramming sounds, words like deprogramming, leaving, or all those stuff, it makes it sound like you do something that's like better or right or correct. But it's performance.
You're just switching it for another thing.
Yeah. Performance is not about being better. It's about understanding those are the rules of life and just being okay with that. I mean, I don't know if you need to be okay with that. You can fight all you want. But the fact is, that's how people work. Everyone performs. It's not like once I recognize this performance, then I can like change it. And your fight is actually directly in relationship to the construct you're fighting against. So the construct is still dictating you.
I think an example of this is my family. All of the women are like traditional in the sense that they all shave their legs and groom themselves and like wear makeup in a womanly way. You could say like, oh, I've been liberated from that because I don't shave my legs or armpits. Or you could say that I perform white feminism.
But how do you get agency? I mean, because it seems pretty bleak. That seems like a pretty bleak viewpoint,
right? Is agency the goal?
I think agency is also always the goal. This goes back all the way to when Walter and I first got to know each other in college.
I feel that agency is a little individualistic. Walter, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Walter's about to fall out of his chair.
It's just upset. Like a conversation that we always have.
Yeah. Walter's having to think on the fly. You can actually see the smoke coming out of his brain. Like, this is the opposite of the conversation Walter wanted to have.
I'm just frustrated because I feel we're using a lot of words that aren't being defined, and we're using it to, like, blanket human experiences. But I'm also frustrated because this feels like a conversation we have all the time and you always bring it up and we just recycle the same shit over and over again. Because I know what you're saying, Swain. I know that, but one, not everyone thinks that's bleak. A lot of people rather just feel this sort of way because it actually makes them feel free. To be honest, if your life right now was perfectly, you had your individual agency and all this stuff and everything was okay, the world would still be bleak.
That's a great, I think that's the best point that's been made today. Everything sucks. No matter what.
You know what? Ugh. See, this is why I hate this conversation. I wish I was with you, Walt, so I could punch you. See, that's why I'm not a philosopher and I'm not an activist. Because, like, when Walter says shit like this that I know he's, like, maybe half right about, I don't like it. I can't be like, well, we gotta do something about it. Or, like, well, what about this? I just wanna hit him.
But that's my point, though, too, right? I said that this shit is freeing. You said it's bleak. Let's flip it to what you would prefer. You would find that freeing, and I would find it bleak. Well, then just change your mindset. Or, I don't know, it's up to you. It still gives you that type of agency that you're, like, demanding for. Nothing has changed, dude. You can still strive for something better. I only brought this up because people don't always recognize the power that dictates and encloses that better alternative that people decide to strive for.
Man, you guys are bringing me down. Man, you guys brought me down, man. I was feeling good today.
About the boys?
About the boys! Come on, let's talk about the boys! I love fat boys.
I also want to clarify the reason why I am fat. I'm a fat-shaming nuisance these days is because I have met so many people in Hong Kong who see me and they go, wow, you are so fat now. It is undeniably happens to me 24/7. Not an excuse, it's just to give a little context of what thing happens in my head. Secondly, I think I'm supposed to dislike Honey Boo Boo, but I don't know anything about her. So I just threw out a random connotation.
You're not supposed to dislike Honey Boo Boo. She's a victim of so many things.
She's adorable.
Yeah, it's not her fault. She's just got like a fucked up mom who put her on reality TV show. That stuff is fucked in particular because it's not only Honey Boo Boo that they're taking advantage of, but the mom they're taking advantage of. They like did a whole reality TV series segment on her like smoking meth and like trying to get clean. It's like absolutely so fucked.
Dude, this is not my, and I'll fucking tell it. So Catherine's friend she's grown up with reality TV and is like pretty obsessed with it. And she finally had to produce her first reality TV show. Basically, they were working with a lot of transgender dancers in Las Vegas, and they got them all to a table and they were filming it, and there wasn't enough drama. And Catherine's friend was like, fuck, this is what I have to do. They asked a waiter to bring up something about them sleeping with one another to take out a fight.
Yeah, I mean, the TV show is bad, but it's so fun to watch. It's so fun to watch. By the way, we are so far from this movie, and I know it was me doing it, but it's something I've been thinking about. It's been in my head, the idea of
why? Is it because you're working out? Is this why too?
No. It's because I have a friend, shout out to Two Fat Femmes. It's a podcast a friend of mine does. I don't know if it's still running, about fatness. And every time I listen to it, that's the question that appears in my mind.
Well, that stuff is very identity-based in so many ways. But Celine answered your question anyways, so
congratulations! She's our favorite boy.
Are you for real?
No, it's Catherine.
Can I finally get my flowers?
No, it's Catherine.
I'm literally going to punch Catherine. I'm going to drop kick her like a football.
Talk about size. Is she taller than Celine? I can't remember how tall Catherine is.
Catherine's pretty tall. Catherine's taller than both of us.
I'm going to jump on her head like a lemur. I'm just going to punch the shit out of her.
We're coming at you, Catherine. Celine's going to fight you.
I'm coming for you, girl.
You guys both live in L.A. Or Cali.
That's true.
I don't live in California anymore, Walter.
Yeah, Celine actually lives on 407 Richmond Street, so go get her.
Dox me. Dox her. Dox me, daddy.
Ooh, I'm gonna dox my boy.
Dox my boy.
Fucking wild. Did it make you guys as horny as it made me?
No.
Do you want to talk about the sex? I mean, the sex is very big deal in this movie.
Yeah, the sex is like super important.
And usually Suede bans me from talking about sex, so.
I have not banned you. I think it is a crutch. I think it is a humor crutch. But since this movie is so sex filled, we should probably talk
Suede's
about
like,
it.
Suede's like, oh, these Catholic churches banned this movie. So pathetic Catholicism. And wow, Suede's here being like, Walter, don't watch this movie. It's too much sex in it.
No, oh my God. Oh my God.
I think one question I have, is sex a sin?
The way I do it, it is.
Ooh, can I actually ask my question follow up to that then?
Go for it.
Do you think people have more sex in hell or more sex in heaven?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I think people have more sex in heaven. I think people fuck Jesus in heaven. I'm going to put that out
my
there.
My grandma. You're making my Molly mad. You're making my grandma mad, bro. What are you doing?
I think if like you get all your desires, how the fuck is not everyone just lining up to fuck Jesus? So Jesus must be like constant fucking in massive amount of orgies with like bukkakes and fucking
dude
600 dicks and vaginas in front of him. You know what I mean?
You should see Celine. She's like vomiting. She's like so uncomfortable. What was the statement that finally put you over the edge? Was it the phrase bukkake?
I think it was 600 dicks and vaginas. I think that was something I didn't need to hear today.
And fursuits, guys. Like,
everyone knows furries
dude.
Go to hell. Everyone knows furries go to hell.
Okay, I believe if you're a good, virtuous Christian and you're a furry, you go to heaven. Literally, this means that heaven is like the most kinky ass fucking place in the world. People probably do scat porn up in heaven.
Oh my God.
That's how kinky heaven is,
dude.
Well, that's why I wanted to know if we could talk about sex, because while I was watching this movie, that was all I was thinking about.
This is why. Because I'm like, yeah, we can talk about sex, and Walter's like, I want to poop on the beach. Oh my God. And I'm like, whoa, come on.
That's what I said. I said, I want to poop on Jesus. Let's clarify.
You can't say that. He's the sacred son of God. Jesus Christ. I'm sorry.
Are you a boy of Jesus?
I'm a Jesus boy.
I'm Jesus's boy.
Walter is definitely Satan's boy. That's for sure.
No, there is no way that Satan lets you have sex. If hell is where nothing is good, then you wouldn't do any of that shit. Only asexual people would be forced to have sex in hell.
Walter, you're saying everyone gets raped in hell?
Jesus.
Wait, what? No, I said
that's
no
what
one
you
has
said.
Sex. I said no
you
one
said
has sex.
You said asexual people get forced to have sex. And
oh,
how?
That's true. That is kind of rape. Fuck.
Walter.
Never mind.
Cut this out the podcast. Cut this bit out. Cut this bit out.
This is good. It's good. This bit is good. People love this
Okay,
shit.
So... People love this bit.
What is happening?
I mean, I will tell you that when I have read about hell, usually sex is not involved. I mean, neither is heaven, but if you want to look at, like, Dante's Inferno, right? A lot of it's, like, drowning in shit or, like, being, like, frozen to death while people, like, throw spears at you. Very little of it is, like, the devil punches your ball sack while he sucks your dick.
I think that in heaven, I think that sex is agitation. And in heaven, you're so at peace that you don't need sex.
Oh, that's good. That, like, you've reached a state of perfect equilibrium and bliss.
And hell is being horny, like this movie. He was the devil because he made everyone horny.
This is why the more Christian people talk about heaven, they just make heaven sound like something that no one wants to go to. Your food is going to be bland. Your fucking life is going to be bland. There's no movies. There's no Anna Karina. Like, what the fuck is the point?
My grandma had me help her order this book off the internet called Will I Be Fat in Heaven? And it was for...
Dude, your grandma's such a Chad.
It was first person accounts of heaven. And what she said to me about heaven, she said that this is what they all say. The view is beyond comparison.
I hate views, though.
What do you mean you hate views? Everything is a view, Walter.
Like, when I'm on top of a mountain, I'm fucking bored out of my mind. I'm like, why the fuck am I here? This is the worst fucking moment
That's
of my
so
entire
crazy
life.
To me, because why can't you just look at the view and be like, look at this movie in real life that I'm watching?
Because the movie means I'm at my computer screen, so I have more comfiness, and if I'm bored, I can pause the movie and watch Twitch. I don't know. Where's Twitch on the
Dude,
fucking mountain?
You are just a little prince boy, huh? You are the little emperor, just like sitting there with your little cheeky smile. Okay, heaven is actually this, which is that it's an infinite field of toilets with a Nintendo Switch, and you have an infinite amount of games, and you can just poop for as long as you want forever. And your legs never get tired or like fall asleep.
That sounds right.
You like a Nintendo Switch, Salim?
No, I was thinking for myself it would be tweeting.
Oh.
You've got a perfect little screen that does exactly what you need. So you don't have to worry about all this excess stuff. So I think sex is not the sin in this movie. So Le Grandeur, as he's like on trial, has this statement. He's like, you guys are the true Satanists, not me. Because if these women are possessed, they're speaking through the voice of the devil. And you would rather listen to the devil than me, a man who stands for Christ. And I was like, holy shit, that's so fucking fantastic. And I think the sex is similar, right? That all of this stuff happens not because people have sex, but because they're not supposed to have sex. Grandeur's philosophy is like, sex with a woman is how I feel closer to God, which is a little horseshit because he does have sex with this young woman and impregnates her, and then it's like, go find yourself a husband because he's a philanderer. But like, underneath that philanderer, there's like a deep need that I think is a flawed need, but is a very human need. And I think the nuns have a very similar need, but because they're not ever allowed to express it, it comes out in this caustic way that is then used by the political bodies that are out to get Grandeur.
Don't get me wrong, I don't think sex is a sin. This is why I fucking, everything out of my mouth is debaucherous. But I do think the film still relies on the fucking sex to be the crazy or the weird or whatever you want to call it.
But the sex that is seen as foul is always with the holy and made profane.
But I think the reason why you're not sympathetic with the main character is because of his philanthropy.
I am. I was totally sympathetic with La Grandeur. Not in the beginning. In the beginning, he's a horseshit guy. But at least he's honest about being a horseshit guy.
He has a redemption arc.
Yes, he has a redemption arc. And he's never redeemed for his actions. He's just redeemed for being like, look, I am a bad dude, but I am not down with Satan. And I am doing things for our community. Like, you don't realize that I'm being scapegoated for my using my bad behavior as a way to, like, destroy our civilization. Which I think is, like, really kind of an engaging thing, because, like, truth be told, through the framework of the church, probably shouldn't be a priest.
Celine?
What do I do if I have to fart on the podcast?
Just let it rip.
You can
just
fart let it rip. On the podcast.
It passed.
So does... Okay, never mind. I don't know if I actually want to... You want to talk about this? Farting?
No.
So angry about this. So angry.
Is this what you want to talk about, Celine?
No, I had a question. One simple question. Can we actually move on? Can we move on from this one?
What did you expect? Is it because usually your friends, when you go, hey, friends, can I fart? Everyone's like, you're so cool to ask us.
No, we'll keep talking about you wanting to fart on the podcast. I was asking for the sake of recording.
You sure you don't want this to be a bit?
I think it's a bit. I think it's a bit.
I don't. Delete it. Oh, my God.
I think it's a bit.
You are so mean.
Celine, are you sympathetic to Grandeur at all?
La Grandeur?
Okay, You know, I actually liked him so much from the because I liked when that girl was like, I'm pregnant, and he did his little monologue of like, oh yeah, like pregnancy, that's crazy.
Yeah, he does anyways, that basically.
Like, that was awesome. That was hilarious as shit. And then I liked how when they were torturing him, it seemed for a while like the torture was just going to be them cutting his hair. Like, I didn't realize that they were also going to burn him.
And cripple him. They were going to smash his legs.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
Let me clarify. I am sympathetic to him getting fucked by politics. That was really unfair. But like him as a character, I am indifferent.
I was sympathetic to him because I thought he was a very fully realized character. He did not feel like a cardboard cutout, and he did not feel like a holy angel, and he did not feel like a bastard. I think he really gets fully fleshed out when he is being charged on trial. I don't know, and some of the conversations he has with the woman that he marries, I think are like really honest, you know, talking about like love with a woman and stuff like that. I don't know, I felt like he was pretty fully realized in a way that I thought was engaging.
You know why I maybe didn't sympathize it so much? There's so many like anti-characters who are just super shitty, and then something more shitty happens to them, so then they like can be the hero, and it's like, oh, it's forgiven. Actually, fuck, not even anti-heroes, this just happens in reality.
But I don't think he was as shitty as you make it out to be, because like, yeah, he sleeps with this girl and doesn't give a shit about her pregnancy, that's bad. He's a flawed character, but he's also trying to keep his town safe. I'm not saying he is a bad guy or a good guy. I am saying he is multifaceted in a way that makes him feel real on the screen, and that then makes me have empathy for him as he's being tortured.
But he's also just trying to keep his town safe because he has power in that town.
I don't think that's...
And power to sleep with everyone. That town is his harem.
I think you're projecting. I think you're projecting. Well, I think that the film really makes it seem like La Grandière cares about this town in a real way.
But so many people are dying in this town. So even if he cared about this town, his care is probably a little displaced.
Well, I mean, some of this is a point of view, right? Because when these people die, it's sad, but Grandeur knows they're going to heaven, like, because he says their last rites. Like, yeah, it sucks that they're dying, but in Grandeur's mind, he's like, this is like, he is the father of a flock.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense. I'm not saying Langrageur had a guilty conscience. I'm saying he should have had a guilty conscience, because despite the fact that his pride made him think he was only making right decisions, actually all those decisions, in my opinion, weren't that perfect.
Yeah, but that's you. That's not what the story is saying. That's your perspective.
No, but we're talking about your sympathy right now. Or your empathy. That has nothing to do with the story now, right?
But the way the movie is made elucidates that those emotions.
Okay, so you think the movie tries to make you
empathetic? Yes, and I think you are moving in opposition to the thing the film is telling. I think the movie is telling you to feel a certain way, and you are frustrated by that, and so you move the opposite direction.
I agree with Sway.
I'm frustrated with that in reality. There's a ton of fucking people in this world who are like considered heroes because they do one motherfucking thing that's like very epic, and I agree, and I respect it. But then it allows you to, like, fucking forgive everything they do.
I think there's a difference between sympathy and forgiveness. Well, that's the key.
Well, okay, number two, I don't understand why there's an issue with this film wants me to feel this way. Fuck that. I'm not going to.
No, there's nothing wrong with the way that, Walter. There's no way with being in opposition to the film's thing. I think it's worth pointing out that is the reason you're feeling this way, maybe.
So you feel like my frustration is why I'm unempathetic and not actually what I just said.
No, I think they're linked. But I think you're also misunderstanding what I'm saying. I don't think Grandeur is like a victim, like he did some bad things, but all is forgiven because he's a good guy. I'm saying he's a flawed human being who is made a victim, and that his flaws and the fact that he is victimized are two drastically different things. In the same way that, like, who's someone who's done some shitty things, but is not like so shitty that it's like the end of the world?
Celine.
I did. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of shitty things, my roommate, I think I woke up my roommate by being loud
on
the podcast.
So you woke up your roommate. That is a crime. That is terrible. That is cancel worthy. Fuck that.
I know.
But if the president comes to you and is like, Celine, you woke up your roommate because you're obsessed with the devil, and so now we're going to burn you at the stake, I would still be like, man, Celine, what a bitch. I can't believe he woke up your roommate. But I, because you are a multifaceted and three-dimensional human being, would have empathy for you as you are burning to death.
Except I do want to burn myself to death.
Right, throw now. You on a pyre. Then we'll eat you. Eat your meat.
Eat my bones.
Eat your bones. Do you get what I'm saying, Walter? Because I don't want to make it out like you're being a like edgelord teenager.
A contrarian.
You are a contrarian, but it's not just that you're being a contrarian.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm saying I understand. And if he was burning on the stake, I would feel bad if he was in front of me. What frustrates me is actually how dominant this narrative is, though. If you want to use this character arc to like develop your character and make me and get me to sympathize with your character, then that's fine. It's not unique. It's not interesting to me anymore because I've seen it so many times. It just makes me feel jaded because it's like so annoying to see all the time. And movies are like, they reflect reality in that way sometimes because you see it in a movie so much that you like end up telling your own story like this. And the best example of this in this fucking movie is his repentance. Basically, fucking bourgeoisie man, I forget his name. It's not Grandeur.
Le Grandeur.
Grandeur is like, I'm going to go visit the king. And then he like, goes into it, this cutscene where he's like riding on a horse and then giving his bread to Jesus Christ. It's like, wow, I'm changed. Write my letters to my wife. Everything's great. And then it's like, oh, that's where I'm supposed to be like, okay, cool. He's a great guy.
No,
now.
I disagree. I don't think that's what that, I think that moment is just more of him exploring his own need for physical intimacy. I do not think it is a moment of repentance.
Okay. I mean, okay. What do you want to say that? I agree with you. You beat me. You defeated me.
I beat you. No. I think it's interesting because I would move the opposite direction to what you're saying, Walter, which is that I get really frustrated when dominant narratives change a whole human being's existence when they're far more complicated than just like good or bad. But I like TV shows, like especially like cop TV shows. Cops are not great people. I think we feel comfortable saying that on the podcast.
Cops are fat. They eat donuts.
But I really like cop shows because the idea of someone who is out there to protect you is engaging and something I think a lot of us want. So when you watch a cop TV show, even though you know, like, all cops are bastards, when you watch the TV show, you're like, oh man, this is working right. This is the way it's supposed to be. This is great. They got the bad guy. So similarly, when you watch a movie tells the narrative of someone like this, I like leaning into it because there's no, oh man, maybe he was a good guy. Maybe he wasn't a good guy, right? Because it's like, no, the movie is making its own rules. And by watching it, you agree to the rules. In NCIS, when they get the bad guy, yeah, he had a family, but the TV show says that he's a bad guy. And the narrative and the world is set up, the world is built in a way that I don't have to feel bad that he's going to jail. I like being told the way to feel sometimes because so much of reality is hard for me to understand how to feel.
Okay, and I respect that. I mean, yeah, that's true. We are fundamentally different in that way. But especially with a narrative that is so constant, because rom-coms have a very cheesy, repetitive narrative all the time, and I have no issue with it.
This is the opposite of the agency conversation.
Celine, can you explain a little bit what you mean by this is so different from the agency conversation? Can you point out the details?
Because you're saying you don't want agency and how you feel, and Walter's saying the opposite. And before, you were talking about agency against like social norms. And Walter was saying the opposite.
And that's probably the reason I feel this way is why I feel the opposite way. So much of my life is trying to have agency over my own existence that sometimes it's nice to not have that agency in a safe space, right? It's a little bit like bondage. It's a little bit like scat porn in heaven, right, Walter?
Kind of like scat porn in heaven, baby. Boys.
It's boy with an I, so it's gender inclusive. Celine, what about you? Where do you fall on this scale?
I think I look to different media for different things. So like for music, I want things handed to me. That's why I like Elliott Smith. That's why I like Green Day, kind of.
So cool.
But
I love
for
you.
Movies,
you sure you want to admit to stuff on the podcast?
No, that's
right now?
Cool, Celine. I would kiss you right now. Cool. I would give you a Sufjan Stevens super chunk.
That's, come on, leave me alone, please.
I like both of them. Well, I don't care. I don't love
Sufjan
Stevens.
Sufjan Stevens.
What about Bright Eyes, guys?
I hate Bright Eyes.
What is Bright Eyes?
It's another band.
What about Pathfinder? Guys, I love Pathfinder.
Okay. But movies I like to explore. And same with visual art.
Yeah, I was going to say, your visual art is much more exploratory than... You have a, what's the word? Curiosity in your art that I think is really engaging. Like, it's never, this is a picture of a sweet horse. If I was going to be a visual artist, all my paintings would be like, look at this sick horse I draw. It has wings.
But also, it's a spectrum, right? Because I don't think I'm that explorative with movies and music. I just find myself more explorative with both of those things compared to everyone else.
Oh, so you're like, better than everyone else.
Exactly. Come on, give me my fucking juice.
You're such a pretentious guy. Well, you're so powerful. You know about so many movies and songs.
But if I'm in the mood to celebrate him as a hero, I may have been in the mood to do that. You know what I mean?
What about Fooly Cooly? Fooly Cooly, I imagine you don't explore in the same way.
But that's what I'm trying to say. It's not really about the medium itself. It's kind of also about an environment. So sorry, spectrum was the wrong word. Like if I was six drinks in watching The Devils with four girls and they were all like, oh my god, this movie's so cool because he's so cool, I'd be like, yeah, he's so cool, guys. And like, I don't know, I was thinking of my dick and not my brain, then I'd probably be like, I'm super sympathetic. It's about environment too.
Why did you make that face when Walter said thinking with his dick instead of his brain?
I didn't like to hear it.
So at the end, La Grandeur gets burned to death, and this, like, shitty asshole gives this nun his, like, burned leg bone. Not shitty nun. She actually... Did you guys think Sister Who'sie What's It was also a sympathetic character? Because I think she was pretty sympathetic.
Yeah, I think she was. She was an incel and a volcel.
She was both an incel and a volcel.
Sympathetic, I mean, they really, for what? I mean, her context?
Well, that she, like, gets taken advantage of.
Okay. Then I'm almost even more curious about who you're not sympathetic for in that town.
The guy who looks like Garfunkel.
He's not from that town, though.
The Duke and his daughter. I will say, so there's this scene where she's naked with white aristocrat face makeup on, and it is like very close to some Harley Quinn energy that did give me some pretty serious pause.
So Celine's down with the words like pause. It's just like the next word.
So like if
that.
I was going to say, I want to put my dick in a clown, Celine would struggle with that.
I do struggle with that. Yes.
Wait. You wouldn't fuck a clown?
I don't want to talk about the clowns.
I like clowns. I think they're sexy.
I don't want to talk about the clowns. I can't talk about the clowns with you.
Walter, do you think clowns are sexy, or is this just like my own weirdness?
I think clowns are hot, but I think a lot of things are hot.
That's true. You do, because you're a debaucherous fool. Yeah.
So explain to me why these people aren't as sympathetic. Celine, do you agree with this?
Yes. I think the girl is like pretty bratty, or like she's like painted that way. And then the Duke is killing those men dressed up as birds.
No, that was the king. I was talking about the bratty girl's dad with the big silly hat. He's the one who holds up the baby.
Oh yeah, I do.
So the bratty girl does in fact have a kid, and they hold up the baby and they're like, looky here, your bastard is gonna see his father burn, and they're like all cheering. I think there's like a very purposeful moment with those characters where they are in the group of onlookers watching them get burned to death and chanting Judas burn. They are not sympathetic because they get caught up in this whole thing and are also not victimized by the thing. Like, the nuns are victims. Even though they are part of this problem, they are victims of the politics.
But didn't you say they are victims too in the end because their town gets destroyed?
Yes.
But everyone's a victim.
But for me, I think that's a little more like Schadenfreude. That's like, oh, well, now at least you get to go fuck yourself because you ruined things in the end.
This is the only reason, because the film dictates that. Here, how about a better example? There's actually one guy who's a better example.
The filet mignon?
Yeah, filet mignon. Because he ends up going to jail afterwards.
He goes to a sanatorium, not jail.
What's a sanatorium? Is that where you see the stars?
Yeah, it's where you go see the stars. It's where you go in, you go to the sanatorium, there's a big telescope, and you look in through it, and you see the stars.
Okay, what are the stars thing called? The stars on the
planetarium.
Ceiling?
Planetarium.
Planetarium! Yeah, okay. Yeah, are you sympathetic to him?
I don't know, but I really like the scene where he masturbates. I thought that was very funny.
All right. I mean, if you allow the film to dictate everything, then yeah, I understand where your sympathies are.
Some of it also is me stuff. So for instance, I can like handle people who are assholes in certain ways. People who connive, I can't handle that. Like people who are like playing secret social games to like get people in trouble.
Wade, you're the most conniving person I know.
It's because I know and I hate
I'm it. Conniving.
Yeah, but you're bad at it, Walt. You're like really, like anytime you try to be conniving, you just like shit on your hands, basically. You've never been successful at being conniving in our entire lifetime knowing each other.
What's a good example of that?
I think the podcast episode where you talked about Suede's muscles.
Yeah. No, we can't pull back the curtain. Well, no, but like, maybe it's because I'm like so repellent towards it, I don't want to interact with it. Like, if there was a secret Twitter, if you had a secret Twitter that everyone else was connected to, and you talk shit about people,
Celine,
and that one person didn't know.
Twitter.
No, Celine doesn't have a secret. Do you have a secret Twitter,
dude?
I don't.
No, but this happened in high school.
But also, like, the idea that you would have, like, a secret secret space to talk shit about other people where they could, like, laugh about it is, like, totally disgusting to me.
But that's what we did!
So wait, we talk shit all the time.
Yeah, but that's not like a...
This is our secret place to talk shit because we're not famous yet.
Is that? No, it's not. We don't talk shit. The only people we talk shit about on this podcast is
Tori. You know
who
we talk shit about? The Goucher freak that you fucking hate.
Yeah, but if I saw him in real life, I would also fucking tell him he's a twat.
Oh, that's what you say about a lot of people. I still want to see you talk to...
No!
To me personally, the reason why I don't hate conniving is because I do conniving so much. So it's so hypocritical.
I have connived. I once connived. There was someone at my old job who was endangering children and our boss wasn't paying attention to it. And so I reported it to someone else who was above our boss.
Okay, so your conniving was heroic.
Yeah, that's not conniving.
Fuck off! I don't want to listen to this bullshit type of conniving. We're talking about like slapping a kid's ice cream onto them and then being like, your asshole is outside, and then you fucking eat them up.
Yep, that's okay. Exactly the kind of conniving. Can you give us an example of times you've attempted to be conniving? Well, because my only idea of you being conniving is when you just, like, are passive-aggressive and quiet and irritated. Like, how are you conniving?
Dude, there are a bunch of people in our philosophy major that I talk shit to about with every single fucking person who would want to listen. And that was not nice. And I feel like I'm still justified to talk shit about them because I hate them so much. But... it was not nice to, like, make sure that everyone who knew me knew that this person had all these things I didn't like about them.
But see, that's
like,
not
they
what
I need to know that.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, you have something you want and you're willing to fuck people over to get it, to, like, publicly humiliate or embarrass someone. Like, maybe the time I got Celine uninvited to that party, that was probably kind of conniving.
That was absolutely conniving.
You know, because I don't remember why I didn't want Celine there, but I didn't. That is, I do feel pretty bad about that.
You should still feel bad. I don't forgive you.
That's why I invited you to this other party. I didn't even tell the other person you're coming. I need to tell them.
Hopefully I can come.
That's true. I mean, if you can't, it's no big deal.
Hold off on that. Yeah, inshallah, I don't know.
Horror movie though, huh? Like, what would you even call this movie?
Like a surrealist comedy?
I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but I was very surprised at what it turned out to be. It reminded me a little bit of Onibaba. I think the line between historical drama and horror film just takes like a few twists and it gets there. Onibaba is very much an effective horror film because of its pacing, but it is also very, like, you can't say that it's not a historical drama, right? Like, it exists in both spaces in a really fantastic way. I think this movie's similar, but I'm not sure I would call it a horror movie. I think rather than this being a horror movie and a historical drama, it is an exploitation film.
Can I respond to that, actually? I think I understand why you wanted to reference history, so I want to stop you because I don't actually think this has anything to do with history. It's an interesting question, like why The Devils doesn't feel like a horror film, but I don't know if the volatility of history is the reason for that. Sure, history could be horror, but history could be anything, really. If you treat history as a story, then you can make a story sound like anything as a storyteller. The reason why I think Onibaba feels like a horror movie, my question is, do you think there can be large horror stories? I think the reason why this movie doesn't work so well as a horror movie is because it's one of those movies where the director's like showing off a little. He's dumping money into props. He's dumping money into getting characters. He's like filming and so much shit he has to do and he's like just putting shit in. Onibaba, on the other hand, is a very concise, small film.
It's sparse. It's sparse and it's in the
what,
stuff
how many characters
you
do you have? 4 or 5 max?
Not counting the people who get killed for.
So I think historical dramas, there are, like, for example, huge samurai epics where like Kurosawa films 100 fucking people riding on horses. Look how fucking good I am at fucking filming 100 people at the same time. I'm so fucking good. I think this film is more on that side. But I also think that's the reason why it's not a horror film. It's hard to be scared about something so fucking massive in that way. Even the war movies that we watch that are horror movies, they always shrink it into like 5 or 6 characters instead of like the whole war.
Why do you agree, Celine?
Because I think in horror movies, in talking about like filming 100,000 people at once and kind of the spectacle of that, I feel like in this movie, communities are allegorical and large. And in horror movies, there's an element of isolation and less teams. With the war thing Walter was saying, I feel like armies are comparable to like the nuns
I think you're right. I think when you look at scope, because I think you can dump money into a horror movie. So for instance, the Nightmare on Elm Street, those movies have a lot of money dumped into them for all the practical effects.
That's fair. That's actually a good point. Money is not the right way to put it.
But it is the scope. It's hard for there to be a horror movie when there are these swaths of people. This has horrible elements, but it is not a horror film because of the teams, I think, is a really good example. The idea of communities being allegories. That's fucking genius, bro.
No, don't say that to me. I already got a big head.
You got a big old head.
Also, here's another thing to add. What would you say is like a fear of a community? I think it's hard to pinpoint. There are theories, right? White people are scared of black people. But like at the same time, it doesn't work the same way. Or like, what is America scared of? War? I don't know. It doesn't translate as well.
I don't know.
It
doesn't,
but I think that something that's interesting, like America, what is America scared of is like whatever Americans are being told to be scared of by capitalists, when what we should really be scared of is capitalism. And I feel like that is a parallel to this movie in the sense that, like, whatever is sin is what the church says is sin.
I mean, and that's what this guy says at the end, La Grandeur, as he's burning to death. You know, you've given away your freedom. You're listening to these people. You've been tricked. They've perverted our rules. You know, you'll never be free when they tear down our walls. It is literally a witch hunt.
And I know communities have witch hunts where, like, the sense of fear that spreads through everything, like COVID and stuff like
that. That's right. COVID wasn't real. It was just a witch.
I think if you're outside of that community, it's very hard to talk about. So the reason why, in my opinion, you feel that, oh, I feel like America's scared of stuff, is because you're actually putting on your own fears onto your idea of what America is. And America is like a little complicated because America celebrates individualism so fucking much that like any individual fear you have can be an American fear. Put that on like China. What are you going to call China's fear? Try talking about other communities that you don't feel like you belong to.
I mean,
I think
it's impossible not to generalize. And part of that is because to even say, like, what is an American's fear or what is someone who's Chinese's fear is, like, that's not even, like, a universal identity.
Yeah, so I think a movie that wanted to be a horror movie, that wanted to do it en masse, it would have to make that community that it's filming feel like it's directly related to you as the viewer.
What about Jordan Peele's movies? I mean, that's like a really good modern example. As has been noted on this podcast, I am not a black guy.
First of all, have you even seen a Jordan Peele movie?
Yeah, I've seen them all.
Because this is it.
Yeah, I've seen them all.
This is, okay, Suede, I've been trying to get Suede to watch Get Out since it came out, and he has refused because he's a racist.
It also makes no sense to bring him up. Does he have mass amount of scope of people in his films?
Yeah, the second one.
No.
The second one is about...
Well, I guess no, Us does, yeah.
Yeah, Us is about, us like, is a about, giant...
Dude, you haven't even
world,
seen
yeah.
the fucking film. How do you know?
Okay, I think Us is about fear, being a have, being punished by the have-nots. But I don't think Get Out's about fear. I think Get Out is about pointing out how white people are monsters.
But there's fear in that.
I think fear places the responsibility on the person being victimized.
As someone who thinks about fear a lot, both personally and artistically, I'd have to think about that.
And because he's crazy and thinks fear is like the greatest emotion in the world.
I think it's the most universal emotion.
Which is dumb.
I think fear is so close to paranoia, which is why I don't like it being applied to racism, because racism is not paranoia.
Okay, that's fair. I'm just thinking about, I mean, it is a scary movie though. So what are we to do with the fact that it does generate fear as you view it?
Isn't this confusion because we're all kind of talking about different fears? Like, I feel like we're conflating a scary movie that scares you because of effects and then an idea that's scary. When I watch Us, I don't think the film is a horror movie because of its scope of ideas. And I don't think the scope of people is really that big either. The film doesn't exactly have scenes where there's a ton of people. I think it's scary because the doppelgangers are well acted and it's a very individual sort of one-on-one. Like, those are the scariest scenes. It's the one-on-one scenes.
No, I think you guys actually might be right. Because the things that make those movies scary have to do with the filmmaking and the acting, not the message at the end. It's using these, like, micro moments, like these interactions between two characters, to breed anxiety and also talk about something larger, right? It's reaching to, like, a fear at the bottom and then pulling it up through these micro scenes, or these micro interactions.
You know what I think matters is you haven't fucking seen Get Out.
Celine, the illusion of this podcast is I've not seen a lot of movies, but I pretend like I have.
Oh my God.
It's the illusion.
This is over.
I guess if there is a fear that this film tackles, it is, like, this fear of desire and fantasy.
Celine and I have argued in the past about fantasy versus reality, and that I don't think people should be held culpable for their fantasies. So much of what happens to this nun is because she is feeling bad for having fantasies. And rather than being able to say, this is a healthy part of my sex life, she says she's been possessed by a devil. I think this shows people don't have to feel ashamed of their fantasies. But there's also a line, right? Like, she does fantasize about Jesus having sex with her. I know we talked about Jesus fucking earlier in the podcast, but she does imagine she's sitting at the altar of Christ as he's being crucified, and then he transforms into Grandeur, who like comes down and like they fuck. She like licks all his wounds, and then they like roll around in the dirt, and that's like part of the beginning of her like spiral into like madness.
I think that that's a different thing between like the fantasies being bad and the fact that she can't talk about it with anyone in a non-shameful but constructive way is bad. I think if you have shameful fantasies, you should confide in a friend, a trustworthy friend, about those.
But why are the fantasies shameful if they're just fantasies? Like, what is inherently shameful about a fantasy?
I don't think there's anything inherently shameful, but I think the fact that she feels ashamed and she's been trained to feel ashamed matters.
But so if we take this out of a nun context, should people be ashamed of their fantasies?
Some of them I personally think people should, and that's because of my own cultural context. Like, I can't let go of my beliefs that people should be ashamed of if they have fantasies that I think
about
are
clowns.
Bad for the world. Exactly.
Like my clown
fantasy. Are we actually talking about fantasy because of clowns? Are we talking about toxic fantasy like pedophilia?
That's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about.
Okay. Sorry, I just like all this like dancing around.
Oh, he's
like,
doing it. What he's the fuck doing are we it. Talking I'm walking about? On eggshells and Walter crashes them all down. Walter hates when I walk on eggshells. Well, no, but I mean like, and I think pedophilia is like a pretty obvious example of like, hey, yeah, you probably shouldn't have those fantasies. I don't know. What if you like think your aunt is hot? Like what do you do with that? Should you be ashamed that you have a hot aunt that you would have sex with, right?
I think it's likely that people would feel ashamed about that.
But should they?
Right. Oh, the should they, won't they kiss me?
The will they, won't they, or the he, she, kiss you. The he, she, they kiss you. He, she, they kiss me. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
I think that kind of incest of this, taboo has very different power dynamics than pedophilia or rape fantasies. So I think in that kind of sense, I can't tell anyone what they should or shouldn't feel ashamed of. You know, I should just tell people that it's probably not in their best interest to act on those things. But I think in terms of like pedophilia and rape, my personal beliefs because of my own context are that people should be ashamed of those fantasies, but not that they should be kept private. I think a problem with shame is that it encourages people to keep things private, and then that's how even more bad stuff happens.
So I actually agree with you in that one of the dangerous things is holding on to fantasies in secret, because they can fester in a way that I think produces action. And I think actually just talking about these things, well, like, so for instance, for me growing up as like a dude, the idea of like gay sex or anal sex was like very much like a taboo thing. I was not supposed to be interested in being the one who is fucked rather than the one who is doing the fucking. Once I got to a space where I could like say that to other people, it like stopped having as much power over me. It stopped being something that I felt ashamed of.
I don't know if the question should be framed as should I be ashamed.
Okay. How would you frame the question?
I would frame the question, what type of friend you want to be? Because, so, my question to you is, if I told you, hey, I want to fuck my aunt, or, hey, I'm a pedophile, you're going to have two different responses,
yes.
Right? So, what are your two different responses there? And I feel like that should answer your question a little, no?
Ooh.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's
true. Very good.
I just wonder how useful shame is. That's my only thought. I think if you have those tendencies, it's probably more useful to figure out why they're there and how to not have them. Versus
yeah,
like,
you don't like shame. That's what we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's,
now.
I think, what my thing is. I don't like shame. I'm not sure how useful it is. It feels masturbatory and like a waste of time.
What the fuck?
I don't know that masturbatory is a word that makes sense there.
Yeah, no, it is. You're like masturbating over yourself. You're like, oh, I'm so ashamed. It's like navel gazing. I have shame spirals. What I do is I give myself a day. Look, I need to deal with these emotions, but if I stay ashamed for like the rest of the week, nothing useful is going to happen. So I'm going to give myself the day to be ashamed, to feel really sorry for myself, and then tomorrow morning, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to smoke a cigarette, and I'm going to do something about it.
If shame is masturbatory, isn't pride also masturbatory?
Yes, but Walter loves pride, so I can't talk smack about it. We were talking about this off the podcast. I think pride is a little, but I think it's okay to have shame and pride. I just don't think they're useful.
Yeah, Swate doesn't think black pride is useful, guys, or pride month, Swate. Actually.
You were the one, no, do you want to get into the snickle fritz? Because you said some wild shit.
I said happiness is useless.
That's the main one, happiness. happiness is useless. Good. That pride is more useful than happiness.
I think pride is the most important emotion of all time. I'm fucking fine with saying that on a podcast. I think that's wild. Take is way more lukewarm than this fucking shame is masturbatory take, so.
I disagree. I know a lot of people who would back me up that shame is a waste of time.
Celine, do you have a hot take on emotions? Do you think happiness is useless? Is sadness the most important emotion? Or is anger the most important emotion? Oh.
I think all the bad emotions are bad and all the good emotions are good.
Really? This is as bad as your take about conniving about the little boy being touched by a man.
Walter, for the record, that's not what happened.
Look, I think it's okay to have pride. I think it's okay to have shame. I just don't think it is a constructive emotion.
I think pride is so fucking constructive.
I think shame is something you often spiral into, whereas pride often begins with a journey to self-love, which is more constructive.
God damn, dude, that's the fucking best right there. That is some hot fire you're spitting. That is fantastic.
Fuck you, Sway. That's what I said off topic.
No, but when you say it so negatively, you don't include self-love.
I did say it's self-love. I said it's the way to love yourself.
No, you literally did not say love. You said you should be unhappy but proud.
Yes, because I think happiness is fucking waste of time.
You want pride to be a weapon. Celine seems to want pride to be a stepstone towards love, which I really like.
Yeah, it's a weapon. But like, it's a weapon for self-love. I never claimed that you use your pride to hurt other people. This is your favorite grandma shit, dude. Jesus stuff. Christians always talk about using weapons as a metaphor for self-love. And pride to me is like the ultimate weapon to defend yourself. Defend who you really are, because you need to in order to love who you fucking are. Otherwise, everyone else is gonna tell you why you shouldn't be loving yourself. I just think happiness is kind of an unintelligent goal. There aren't any steps to achieve happiness, and it seems like once you achieve it, you don't really gain anything. I think happiness can only be a byproduct of the goal you strive for. It's so fleeting that, like, even when you're experiencing happiness, it's hard to really meditate on it and be in the moment. But pride has very clear steps, and it's very easy to understand how you achieve it. And it feels like once you achieve pride, you gain so many tools and also get rid of so much baggage. And it's one of the first easy ways to happiness. The second way, I do agree with Cheryl saying that gratitude is probably another good way to go, where you understand what makes you happy, or you're happy about things around you. But that's something I'm not very good at. Right now, I only understand how to spiral into gratitude. I haven't exactly figured out how to activate it, but I want to work on it. I want to fucking be better at it. But I'm very good at pride. That's why I love pride.
Well, let's just say right now what we're grateful for. I'm grateful for my friends Walter and Celine that are here on this podcast with me, that we're having a good time together.
I mean, to be honest, I am grandeur.
I get to spend time with two people.
I'm grandeur.
You're grandeur?
I'm the savior of Jesus that everyone wants to fuck here. I start out very proud, and I try to learn how to be grateful about my wife and God.
I am very thankful for all the times I see Celine make a horrible face when Walter says something absolutely insane.
I'm thankful for all of Walter's dicks and vaginas.
I'm grateful for Buies for recommending this movie to Suede, because it produced such a great conversation with three great people. That's her name, right? Buiza? Buies?
No, it's Laura.
Okay, Bora.
From the bookstore.
Bora.
She's Buiza.
Buiza.
Right now, it kind of seems like being the best host is a little contentious. But, Celine, you do kind of hold the best fan spot.
Thank you.
However, Celine, you may have competition soon, because we had to shout out Maddie once again, right?
Yeah.
How many fucking tweets?
Yeah, she's like our OG. She's our ultimate Twitter fan. She's the best.
I'll kill her.
Yeah, and also she's living proof that the bookmarks work.
Yeah,
you finally have a fucking response, which I was so doubtful of, because that fucking bookstore guy from the Poland guy, who I'm not shitting on right now,
horror author,
he did send us a fucking message. Also, speaking of this stuff, Celine, yeah, so you should compete a little more and be better at tweeting at us.
Yeah, we better see you on the Twitter space. Also, let it be known, Celine has like this like very fancy art email that she sends out like once a month to all her like friends. It's like, look at all these cool things that my friends are doing. Here's like a visual poetry performance about, you know, undocumented people, and like here's like a zine on how to like educate kids in a gender neutral fashion. And like, not once has our fucking podcast been on. Our podcast, which is a positive thing in this fucking tornado of chaos. We are okay. A beacon. We are a shining beacon. Not once has it been included.
It's fine, Suede. I'm not putting what you just said on, so none of our little DJs can hear it. And that way it's fair. No one gets anything. Everyone stays at the bottom.
Everyone stays crying.
Fuck happiness.
That's right. Only pride. I am pride. I am proudful. What seven deadly sins do you guys most represent? I know what mine is.
Gluttony. Glutton.
You guys are both gluttony. I'm probably lust, not gonna lie.
You're probably wrath.
Oh, that's true. I do have a temper. I try to keep it under control. It's been a long time since I lost my temper on anyone. Actually, that's not true. I lost my temper on Walter a few weeks ago. I got very angry at Walter. Like, how could you? I was so mad.
I think anger makes us grow together. It builds character.
Anger is important. I mean, Celine and I have gotten angry at each other.
Stronger than ever. More in love than ever.
We're in love. We're boys in love.
This boys joke can't be running. It can't be a running joke. It's not funny. It's actually not even funny.
It's really funny.
Shout out to Buiza. What's up?
If you are actually here, Buiza, give us an email. I'd love to get your name right. I'm only going to get your name right if you fucking send us something. Otherwise, you are getting Buiza from now on. That's your... You are replacing... This is going to get beat. But you are replacing...
Donut!
No. No.
Also, do we ever shout out Jamie's fucking art for us? Speaking of fantastic.
Oh my god, I feel like we shouted it out on the Twitter, but Jamie did make that fantastic art. I shouted it out on the Twitter.
I started putting it on my YouTube too, and since we talked about our favorite listeners, right now it's Celine, Maddie, and Jamie.
I love all our listeners equally.
Nah, fuck that shit. Why do you want to do that? That means someone who like listened to us once is like, oh my god, he loves me so much, I'll never have to listen again. No, if you don't listen to this podcast all the fucking time and you don't send us shit, get the fuck out of here.
Don't listen to Walter. No.
Send us fat art too.
Send us fat art.
Yeah, actually that would be pretty fun. If you do that, I will wear that for Halloween. Actually, that's really problematic.
Yeah, that's not good. Plus, you don't have to wear a costume, Walt. You don't have to wear a costume to be fat on Halloween, Walter.
Okay, but Egyptians still put on Egyptian outfits for Halloween.
That's no, I'm true. Saying you're fat. That was the goof. The goof was saying you're fat.
Fat people appropriating fat culture.
Follow us on Twitter. Also, Celine, you want to shout out your Twitter?
Yeah, it's at canders31 impossible kufta.
Beep! Edited it out.
Okay.
Celine mostly tweets all lowercase lo-fi weirdo statements and occasionally...
Wait, can we actually read out one tweet?
I am so much like Martin Short's characters in the show, like how annoying he is. What are you even talking about, Celine?
I'm talking about Only Murders in the Building.
Or a lemur and a raccoon are the same.
That's actually a good tweet. That's actually a good tweet.
Oh, we're not reading good tweets?
We're reading the multifaceted tweets. Well, after you're done fooling around with all of Celine's tweets, be sure to follow us at Fake Film Fans. Shoot us an email. The email address is fakefilmfans@gmail.com. And again, if you get a bookmark, just let us know. Share the podcast with your friends.
Yeah, right now, despite the fact that I appreciate Maddie's message to us, it is still 1 out of 500 bookmarks that have created results. So I just still a little in doubt of Sway's theory of statistics.
I think this is working perfectly, and I'm a genius of statistics. Celine, do you wanna carry us out?
When you watch a movie, do it with the lights on.
That's not even. It's bye.
Oh, I got it. Let me try.
Okay, you try it.
The girl's beauty got all of his lives ruined, so she killed her first husband, and
she wore a medal. She had a medal.
With the lights off.
She was in the meadow. With the lights off. Yeah, fucking
just
Christ.
Do it, Suede.
You gotta do it, Suede.
If you're gonna watch a movie, do it with the lights off.